Hey kitten, we're continuing chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. If you remember, he was just taken to Hogwarts by Tonks, and Snape just came out to greet him. "Well, well, well," sneered Snape, taking out his wand and tapping the padlock once, so that the chain snaked backward and the gate creaked open. "Nice of you to turn up, Potter, although you have evidently decided that the wearing of school robes would detract from your appearance." "I couldn't change. I didn't have my..." Harry began, but Snape cut across. "There's no need to wait, Nymphadora. Potter is quite, safe in my hands." I meant Hagrid to get the message," said Tonks, frowning. "Hagrid was late for the start of term feast, just like Potter here, so I took it instead. And incidentally," said Snape, standing back to allow Harry to pass him, "I was interested to see your new Patronus." He shut the gate in her face with a loud clang and tapped the chains with his wand again so that they slithered, clinking, back into place. "I think you were better off with the old one," said Snape, the malice in his voice unmistakable. "This new one looks weak." As Snape flung the lantern about, Harry saw a fleetingly look of shock and anger on Tonks' face. Then she was covered in darkness once more. "Good night," Harry called over his shoulder, as he began to walk up to the school with Snape. "Thanks for everything. See you, Harry." Snape did not speak for a minute or so. Harry felt as though his body was generating waves of hatred so powerful that it seemed incredible that Snape could not feel them burning him. He had loathed Snape from their first encounter, but Snape had placed himself forever and irrevocably beyond the possibility of Harry's forgiveness by his attitude toward Sirius. Whatever Dumbledore said, Harry had time to think about over the summer, and had concluded that Snape's snide remarks to Sirius about remaining safely hidden while the rest of the Order of the Phoenix were off fighting Voldemort had probably been a powerful factor in Sirius rushing off to the Ministry the night he had died. Harry clung to this notion because it enabled him to blame Snape, which felt satisfying, and also because he knew that if anyone was not sorry that Sirius was dead, it was the man now striding next to him in the darkness. 50 points from Gryffindor for lateness, I think," said Snape. "And let me see, another 20 for your Muggle attire. You know, I don't believe any house has ever been in negative figures this early this term. We haven't even started pudding. You might have set a record, Potter." The fury and hatred bubbling inside Harry seemed to blaze white hot, but he would rather have been immobilized all the way back to London and tell Snape why he was late. "I suppose you wanted to make an entrance, did you?" Snape continued. "And with no flying car available, you decided that bursting into the Great Hall halfway through the feast ought to create the dramatic effect?" Still, Harry remained silent, though he thought his chest might explode. He knew that Snape had come to fetch him for this, for the few minutes that he could needle and torment Harry without anyone else listening. They reached the castle steps at last, and the great oaken doors swung open into the vast, flagged entrance hall. A burst of talk and laughter and of tinkling plates and glasses greeted them through the doors standing open to the great hall. Harry wondered whether he could slip his invisibility cloak back on, thereby gaining his seat at the long Gryffindor table, which inconveniently was the farthest from the entrance hall, without being noticed. As though he had read Harry's mind, however, Snape said, "No cloak. You can walk in so that everyone sees you, which is what you wanted, I'm sure." Harry turned on the spot and marched straight through the open doors, anything to get away from Snape. The great hall, with its four long house tables and its staff table set at the top of the room, was decorated as usual with floating candles that made the plates below glitter and glow. It was all a shimmering blur to Harry, however, who walked so fast that he was passing the Hufflepuff table before people really started to stare, and by the time they were standing up to get a good look at him, he had spotted Ron and Hermione, sped along the benches toward them, and forced his way in between them. "Blimey, what have you done to your face?" said Ron, goggling at him, along with everyone else in the vicinity. "What's wrong with it?" said Harry, grabbing a spoon and squinting at his distorted reflection. "You're covered in blood," said Hermione. "Come here." She raised her wand and said, "Terrigio," and siphoned off the dried blood. "Thanks," said Harry, feeling his clean face. "How's my nose looking?" "Normal," said Hermione anxiously. "Why shouldn't it? Harry, what happened? We've been terrified." "I'll tell you later," said Harry curtly. He was very conscious that Ginny, Neville, Dean, and Seamus were listening in. Even nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost, had come floating along the bench to eavesdrop. "But," said Hermione. "Not now, Hermione," said Harry in a darkly significant voice. He hoped very much they would all assume he'd been involved in something heroic, preferably involving a couple of Death Eaters and a Dementor. Of course, Malfoy would spread the story as far and wide as he could, but there was always a chance it wouldn't reach too many Gryffindor ears. He reached across Ron for a couple of chicken legs and a handful of chips, but before he could take them, they vanished, to be replaced with puddings. "You've missed the sorting anyway," said Hermione, as Ron dived for a large chocolate gâteau. "Hat say anything interesting?" asked Hermione, taking a piece of treacle tart. Sorry, asked Harry, taking a piece of treacle tart. "More of the same, really, advising us all to unite in the face of our enemies, you know." "Dumbledore mentioned Voldemort at all?" "Not yet, but he always saves his proper speech after the feast, doesn't he? It can't be that long now." "Snape said Hagrid was late for the feast." "You've seen Snape, how come?" said Ron, between frenzied mouthfuls of gâteau. "Bumped into him," said Harry evasively. "Hagrid was only a few minutes late," said Hermione. "Look, he's waving at you, Harry." Harry looked up at the staff table and grinned at Hagrid, who was indeed waving at him. Hagrid had never quite managed to comport himself with the dignity of Professor McGonagall, head of Gryffindor House, on top of whose head came up to somewhere, the top of whose head came up to somewhere between Hagrid's elbow and his shoulder as they were sitting side by side, and who was looking disapprovingly at this enthusiastic greeting. Harry was surprised to see the divination teacher, Professor Trelawney, sitting on Hagrid's other side. She rarely left her tower room, and he had never seen her at the start of term feast before. She looked as odd as ever, glittering with beads and trailing shawls, her eyes magnified to enormous size by her spectacles. Having always considered her a bit of a fraud, Harry had been shocked to discover at the end of the previous term that it had been she who had made a prediction that caused Lord Voldemort to kill Harry's parents and attack Harry himself. The knowledge had made him even less eager to find himself in her company, but thankfully this year he would be dropping divination. Her great beacon-like eyes swiveled in his direction. He hastily looked away toward the Slytherin table. Draco Malfoy was miming the shattering of a nose to raucous laughter and applause. Harry dropped his gaze to his treacle tart, his insides burning again. What he would not give to fight Malfoy one-on-one. "So what did Professor Slughorn want?" Hermione asked. "To know what really happened at the Ministry," Harry said. "Him and everyone else here," sniffed Hermione. "People were interrogating us about it on the train, weren't they, Ron?" "Yeah," said Ron, "all wanting us to know if you're really the chosen one." "There has been much talk of that very subject, even amongst the ghosts," interrupted nearly headless Nick, inclining his barely connected head toward Harry so that it wobbled dangerously on its ruff. "I am considered something of a Potter authority. It is widely known that we are friendly. I have assured the spirit community that I will not pester you for information, however. Harry Potter knows that he can confide in me with complete confidence, I told them. I would rather die than betray his trust." "That's not saying much, since you're already dead," Ron observed. "Once again you show all the sensitivity of a blunt axe," said nearly headless Nick, in affronted tones, and he rose into the air and glided back toward the far end of the Gryffindor table, just as Dumbledore got to his feet at the staff table. The talk and laughter echoing around the hall died almost instantly. "The very best of evenings to you," he said, smiling broadly. His arms opened wide as though to embrace the whole room. "What happened to his hand?" gasped Hermione. She was not the only one who had noticed. Dumbledore's right hand was as blackened and dead-looking as it had been on the night he had come to fetch Harry from the Dursleys. Whispers swept the room. Dumbledore, interpreting them correctly, merely smiled and shook his purple and gold sleeve over his injury. "Nothing to worry about," he said airily. "Now to our new students, welcome, and to our old students, welcome back. Another year full of magical education awaits you." "His hand was like that when I saw him over the summer," Harry whispered to Hermione. "I thought he'd have cured it by now, or Madame Pomfrey would have done." "It looks as if it's died," said Hermione, with a nauseated expression. "But there are some injuries you can't cure, old curses, and there are some poisons without antidotes. And Mr. Filch, our caretaker, has asked me to say that there's a blanket ban on any joke items bought at the shop called Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. Those wishing to play for the house Quidditch teams should give their names to their head of house, as usual. We are also looking for a new Quidditch commentator, who should do likewise. We are pleased to welcome new members of the a new member of the staff this year, Professor Slughorn. Slughorn stood up, his bald head gleaming in the candlelight, his big waistcoated belly casting the table below into a shadow. He is a former colleague of mine who has agreed to resume his old post of potions master. Potions? Potions? The word echoed all over the hall as people wondered whether they had heard right. Potions, said Ron and Hermione together, turning to stare at Harry. But you said... Professor Snape, meanwhile, said Dumbledore, raising his voice so that it would be carried over all the muttering, will be taking over the position of Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. No, said Harry, so loudly many heads turned in his direction. He didn't care. He was staring up at the staff table, incensed. How could Snape be given the Defense Against the Dark Arts job after all this time? Hadn't it been widely known for years that Dumbledore did not trust him to do it? But Harry, you said that Slughorn was going to be teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts, said Hermione. I thought he was, said Harry, racking his brains to remember when Dumbledore told him this. But now he was come to think of it, he was unable to recall Dumbledore ever telling him what Slughorn would be teaching. Snape, who was sitting on Dumbledore's right, did not stand up at the mention of his name. He merely raised a hand in lazy acknowledgment of the applause from the Slytherin table. Yet Harry was sure he could detect a look of triumph on the features he loathed so much. Well, there's one good thing, he said savagely. Snape will be gone by the end of the year. What do you mean? Asked Ron. The job's jinxed. No one's lasted more than a year. Quirrell actually died doing it. Personally, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for another death. Harry, said Hermione, shocked and reproachful. He might just go back to teaching potions at the end of the year, said Ron reasonably. That Slughorn bloke might not want to stay long term. Moody didn't. Dumbledore cleared his throat. Harry, Ron, and Hermione were not the only ones who had been talking. The whole hall had erupted in a buzz of conversation at the news that Snape had finally achieved his heart's desire. Seemingly oblivious to the sensational nature of the news he had just imparted, Dumbledore said nothing more about staff appointments, but waited a few seconds to ensure that the silence was absolute before continuing. Now, as everybody in this hall knows, Lord Voldemort and his followers are once more at large and gaining in strength. The silence seemed to tauten and strain as Dumbledore spoke. Harry glanced at Malfoy. Malfoy was not looking at Dumbledore, but making his fork hover in midair with his wand, as though he found the headmaster's words unworthy of his attention. I cannot emphasize strongly enough how dangerous the present situation is, and how much care each of us at Hogwarts must take to ensure that we remain safe. The castle's magical fortifications have been strengthened over the summer. We are protected in new and more powerful ways, but we still must guard scrupulously against carelessness on the part of any student or member of staff. I urge you, therefore, to abide by any security restrictions that your teachers might impose upon you, however irksome you might find them, in particular the rules that you are not to be out of bed after hours. I implore you, should you notice anything strange or suspicious within or outside the castle, to immediately report it to a member of staff. I trust you to conduct yourselves always with the utmost regard for your own and others' safety. Dumbledore's blue eyes swept over the students as he smiled once more. But now, your beds await, as warm and comfortable as you could possibly wish, and I know that your top priority is to be well rested for your lessons tomorrow. Let us therefore say goodnight. Pip, pip. With the usual deafening, scraping noise, the benches were moved back and hundreds of students began to file out of the Great Hall toward their dormitories. Harry, who was in no hurry at all to leave with a gawping crowd, nor to get near enough to Malfoy to allow him to retell the story of the nose stamping, lagged behind, pretending to retie the lace on his trainer, allowing most of the Gryffindors to draw ahead of him. Hermione had darted ahead to fulfill her prefect's duty of shepherding the first years, but Ron remained with Harry. "What really happened to your nose?" he asked, once they were at the very back of the throng pressing out of the hall, and out of earshot of anyone else. Harry told him. It was a mark of the strength of their friendship that Ron did not laugh. I saw Malfoy miming something to do with a nose, he said darkly. Yeah, well, never mind that, said Harry bitterly. Listen to what he was saying before he found out I was there. Harry had expected Ron to be stunned by Malfoy's boasts. With what Harry considered pure pigheadedness, however, Ron was unimpressed. Come on, Harry. He was just showing off for Parkinson. What kind of mission would you know who have given him? How do you know Voldemort doesn't need someone at Hogwarts? It wouldn't be the first. I wish you'd just stop saying the name, Harry, said a reproachful voice behind them. Hagrid looked over his shoulder to see... Harry looked over his shoulder to see Hagrid shaking his head. Dumbledore uses that name, said Harry stubbornly. Yeah, well, that's Dumbledore, isn't it? Said Hagrid mysteriously. How come you're late, Harry? I was worried. Got held up on the train, said Harry. Why were you late? I was with Grop, said Hagrid happily. Lost track of time. He's got a new home up in the mountains now. Dumbledore fixed it. Nice big cave. He's much happier than he was in the forest. We were just having a good chat. Really? Said Harry, taking care not to catch Ron's eye. The last time he met Hagrid's half-brother, a vicious giant with a talent for ripping up trees by the roots, his vocabulary had comprised 5 words, 2 of which he was unable to pronounce properly. Oh yeah, he's really come on, said Hagrid proudly. You'd be amazed. I'm thinking of the training of training him up as me assistant. Ron snorted loudly, but managed to pass it off as a violent sneeze. They were now standing beside the oak front doors. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow. First lesson straight after lunch. Come early and say hello to Witherwings. Raising an arm in cheery farewell, he headed out the front doors into the darkness. Harry and Ron looked at each other. Harry could tell that Ron was experiencing the same sinking feeling as himself. You're not taking care of magical creatures, are you? Ron shook his head. You're not either, are you? Harry shook his head. And Hermione, said Ron. She's not, is she? Harry shook his head, too. Exactly what Hagrid would say when he realized his 3 favorite students had given up his subject, he did not like to think. And that's the end of chapter 8, and next we'll read chapter 9, called The Half-Blood Prince, which is the title of the book. Dun, dun, dun. Anyways, it's bedtime for the kitten and bedtime for the pup. And I hope you're drifting off now and dreaming of me, and I will go dream of you now. I love you so much, baby girl. Sleep well.